Thank you for tuning into Black Books Live. Today, we're featuring Arthur Flowers, Another Good Loving Blues. Stay tuned.
Thank you all for tuning in to Black Books Live. I'm your host, Cher J, with my co-host, Jason Harris. Today, we are featuring the work of a living master, award-winning novelist, essayist, and performance poet, Arthur Flowers. Professor Flowers is the author of two novels, Another Good Loving Blues and DeMojo Blues, as well as nonfiction memoir, Mojo Rising, Confessions of a 21st Century Conjure Man, and other books. Flowers states that his work is focused on the interplay between literature, myth work, and human destiny. He augments this work of creative production through cultural retention with the modern trappings of cyberspace, as he regularly posts on his blog, Roots Blog, a cyber hoodoo web space. He is a founding member director of New Renaissance Writers Guild of NYC, the Griot Shop based in Memphis, and the Pan-African Literary Forum. He's a former executive director of the Harlem Writers Guild. Flowers currently teaches literature at Syracuse University. Today we are presenting excerpts of his classic novel, an epic rooted in the blues of his native Memphis, Tennessee. Without further ado, Black Books Live proudly presents Arthur Flowers, Another Good Loving Blues.
You are listening to Black Books Live.
Melvira Dupree was considered by folks in these parts of Arkansas to be a somewhat unconventional conjurer. First off, she was such an attractive woman. Folks had very clear-cut ideas of what a conjurer should look like, strange, weird, and otherworldly. Second off, she was living in sin with a blues man. Folks expected more decorum from their conjurers, but she was good. Folk will forgive you anything if you're good. Hoodoo Maggie had taught her well, and at 32, she has never been defeated. Life ain't touched her. Consequently, she was partial to her right hand over her left. Folks that wanted to put a trick on somebody went to Hoodoo Maggie. They come to Miss Melvira to have that trick took off. Could find your lost items, lost mates, lost health. Told old man Cratchit where to find that lost deed of his and saved him from losing his farm. Told that fool Rooster Clay where his cows was that time. The sheriff over at Clarksville asked her opinion on a case in a minute. Felony or misdemeanor, it don't matter. Why, just last year, she restored the feeling in Janet Gibson's legs after the doctors told her she would never walk again. You name it, Melvira Dupree could fix it. Treated Sweetwater, Arkansas like it belonged to her personal. A spider in the middle of her web, responding to every twitch and shimmer. A community resource that belonged to the good colored folk of Sweetwater, Arkansas, like the lumber in Sweetwater Woods or the catfish in Sweetwater Creek. Knew most everybody's secrets and all their business, and didn't have no shame about interfering as she saw fit. Queen Esther knew she was in for a lecture before she came. A small woman made even smaller for her determination to be overlooked by life. Queen Esther hid herself in the ritual of living, avoiding whenever possible its mess and its glory. So good at it that even Melvira was surprised when Queen Esther came to her with brand new life exuding from her every pore. "Should have come to see me before," grumbled Melvira Dupree, "not after." Queen Esther sighed with all the weariness that the human race was capable of. All her life she had been late, or something. As if fearing that Melvira would refuse her, she took a deep breath and rushed her plea out in one gasp.
"All I want is something to kill his seed, Miss Melvira. Don't want him.
don't want his memory. Candles flicker at the four corners of the earth. Shadows dance. Melvira looked at Queen Esther till the woman dropped her head, her confidence quickly seeping out of her. What you really want, child? Queen Esther bowed her head.
I probably want him back, Miss Dupree.
Soft, almost unheard. Dupree's expression clearly asked why. Young Jubal was a known roustabout.
Ain't no why, Miss Dupree. I just want him back. Don't want to live without him.
Now, Melvira was a hoodoo after all, and people's passions were her business. But she didn't approve. The flickering candles made the frown on her face sterner than it is, and Queen Esther's hard-won audacity completely collapsed. Melvira took out her Johnny Conker roots. She touched the fisted roots to Queen Esther's forehead before dropping them to the table. She stared at the design long moments before repeating the sequence. Seeking secrets, finally she looked up, tired, surprised, looking deeply at Queen Esther in an attempt to further see what lay beneath the meek surface. She never would have expected family, even with struggle. And then in the distance they heard the faint echoes of a rooster. Melvira listened. She seemed to forget that the woman was still sitting there in front of her. It was long moments before Queen Esther ventured to speak.
Miss Melvira.
Melvira didn't respond.
Miss Melvira.
Melvira's eyes refocused. Queen Esther felt her return. You can have him, Melvira said crisply.
Take flowers and honey to the creek. Leave them for the spirits. You take this here candle, you burn it half an hour for every sunrise, every day till Sunday next. You sit there with that candle and you think about this. Let the sun cut through that fog in your mind, and if you still decide you want him, I'll give him to you. The spirits say you can have him.
Queen Esther hesitated.
Don't you worry none, said Melvira. My working is the sun and the moon and all the stars. You rest easy. Melvira Dupree is working on you.
Mary Ellen Rogers was known to be a no-nonsense woman. Practical, down-to-earth, Capricorn sun, moon, and rising, respected elder of the Sweetwater New Zion Baptist Church and long past childbearing age when she had Carol Lee.
God's gift,
Mary Ellen called her when she was alone with the equally proud Willie Bob. Willie Bob was a real quiet man mostly, hardly ever smiled except when that baby was around. Both of them felt just as blessed as they could be. Mary Ellen breasted that baby as long as she could and felt in some way inadequate when her laughing little two-year-old suddenly quit laughing and took to her bed without being told, hot and fevered and spitting black mucus. A worried Mary Ellen and Willie Bob were still up about 2 a.m. when they heard a knock on the door. Willie Bob opened it and stepped back. Melvira Dupree stood on the porch, shoulder-draped white shawls gleaming haint-like in the darkness. Melvira motioned the gaunt woman to step outside, and Mary Ellen's breath caught in her throat. Clearly concerned, Willie Bob stood uncertainly in the doorway, a shaft of light from inside throwing his shadow on the two women standing on the porch. Melvira Dupree touched Mary Ellen's shoulder, and Mary Ellen instinctively jerked away. Melvira pointed to the west.
There's a city there, she said. Little Rock? No, a city of the dead.
Oh, said Mary Ellen, little voice breaking.
The cemetery. Call someone you know there.
What? But? She looked at the rigid figure beside her.
Call.
Hard, angry.
My friend Sally. Call her. Sally.
A dry whisper. Melvira watched the night. Mary Ellen stood quietly beside her, watching Melvira Dupree and listening to Carol Lee's faint whimpers from inside the house. Melvira caught her breath.
Call another.
Another? Quickly, she said in a voice like cold, hard steel.
My grandmother? Call her. Pearl.
Again.
Pearl. Inside, Carol Lee stopped whimpering, and the night was suddenly still. Melvira redraped her shawls and left the porch. Mary Ellen went inside. Carol Lee wore the faint smile of a peaceful sleep. Praise the Lord. The next day, Willie Bob left a mess of greens, yams, and mason-jarred preserves at the door of the little cabin on Sweetwater Creek.
You are listening to Black Books Live.
It was a hot black juke joint June night that the crooked old man in black came. The night was most over. The few folks still on the dance floor were moving slow and easy in a dim, smoky room like a morning half dream. Dawn still an unborn promise in the east. Big Pig Willie came from behind the bar and opened the front door of the juke to let a cool breeze flow through. Melvira was one of the stragglers, sitting at a table with Geneva, waiting on Bodine mostly. Bodine and Jake were on stage, doing their favorite blues, going down slow. I've had my fun if I don't get well no more. Melvira appreciated the cool breeze coming in through the open door, and she and Geneva were sharing a mellow early morning laugh when the crooked old man walked in. She felt him enter and looked up. A big-headed man in black shades, lean and bent, curiously dignified and correct in a high-top silk hat and a black box-tailed evening coat. The few dancers left on the floor apparently neither saw nor touched him, dancing around him as if he were an empty space. His dark glasses glittered in the half-lit club and smoke rose lazily from a cigar in his mouth. The Baron himself. The music drew his attention and his head slowly swiveled to the stage. Jake and Bodine. For the first time in her life, Melvira knew a fear so deep it left her weak. "No," she whispered fiercely, her eyes narrowing into vicious feline hunting slits. "No." The Baron stumbled and choked on his cigar. More surprised than angry, he swiveled his oversized head. A steady hand lifted dark glasses and their eyes locked. Melvira was suddenly dizzy. The crowded juke wavering out of focus. Another world. The noose was suddenly loosened and she was left discombobulated. The flat black eyes issued a casual, almost amused command and, choking back a cry, Melvira fled from the juke into the growing morning. Bodine missed a chord. He frowned, thick eyebrows drawn together in his forehead. But he hadn't noticed anything out of place, so he shrugged it off. He played on. The Baron watched her leave before turning back to the stage with a rather tired and weary sigh. Everybody got burdens to bear. Jake and Bodine took a break. Bodine took a drink of the Tennessee sipping whiskey on the edge of his piano top and worked his stiff fingers. He looked at them with disgust. They bothered him whenever it rained or on chilly nights. The bones going bad, Melvira had told him. One day they'd go out on him. What would he do when he couldn't play the blues no more? The crooked old man in the black shades and a silk top hat walked toward the stage. Jake noticed him then and watched him approach with snake-eyed fascination. Like they the only two people in the juke, in the whole world. Already? Thought Jake. He knew immediately. You always do. Sometimes it's worth your while to fight and sometimes it ain't. Jake calculated it right away, staring at his reflection in the black shades and seeing the flat no there. He saw all the things he hadn't done, the woman he hadn't loved, the blues he hadn't sung, the children unborn. He shook his head and he whispered, "Why me, God? Why me?" "Hello, blues man." The Baron's voice is a dry, dry wind, and Jake smiles a deep and enigmatic shrug of a smile. He had forgot it, hadn't he? He was a blues man, wasn't he? Suddenly mellow, he held out an arresting hand. The crooked old man hesitated, and Jake caressed the neck of his guitar. He had picked a lot of cotton to buy that old guitar of his, hands so calloused it was sometimes hard to feel the music through them. I spec it was worth it. He had no complaints. He had had his fun, and if he didn't get well no more, if he got to go down, he was gonna go down slow. Jake smiled and began to play a beautiful, haunting blues that immediately riveted the entire juke. The soft babble of noise grew into silence, and Bodine nodded his approval, backing him up with soft chords. The real thing, a damn good blues. Much too soon it was over, and Jake nodded his satisfaction, let his guitar hang from his neck strap, and folded his hands over top of the wood, polished slick with years of his sweat. Then he closed his eyes and waited his due. The milling crowd was still yelling approval of his offering when the crooked old man reached out and took his soul. The empty shell collapsed and the crooked old man turned to leave. He stumbled, weakened. It's harder sometimes for death to take an artist. They are curiously and passionately connected to life and leave it with reluctant grace. Inspired by Jake's solo, Bodine started putting that piano of his through its paces. When Jake didn't throw down with him, Bodine looked at him curiously.
"Hey, Jake," Bodine yelled at him. "You through already? The night's still young, youngster. Ain't you got no stamina?"
Jake don't move. Jake don't answer. Bodine's chords dribble into silence, and he looks Jake over a little more closely. A couple of other folks noticed that Jake was sitting kind of still. Gradually, the noise died down and a loud, blaring silence filled the juke. He stared at Jake for a perplexed moment as if he didn't understand or just didn't want to.
"Oh, Jake," said Bodine with a wry little shrug of a smile, much like the one Jake had used on the crooked old man. "You had some good blues left in you, boy."
And then, as if of their own volition, his hands began to play a blues for Jake. A down-home Delta midnight blues, a riff on Jake's last melody. Folks that was there that night say to this day that Luke Bodine had never before played a blues so mean. They heard that moist Delta wind in every note, felt that lucky old morning sun lazy rippling on the river, and those long late juke joint nights wringing every drop of pleasure out of the hard Delta life. Luke Bodine played the blues and folks felt low-down horizons and long, back-breaking cotton days easing up off their souls. One day we all get to rest. One day we all get to lay our burdens down. Till then, Luke Bodine gonna play the blues.
All I love is Delta.
Oh yes, Bodine played a blue-black Delta night velvet blues that morning. Some rest me, Lord, rest me easy blues. I've traveled a long, hard road and I'm weary, weary man. Boy played so good, dawn herself rose glowing in the east, came through the open front door of the juke and sat in a corner, patting her feet and nodding her head to some mighty fine blues.
Rest me, Lord, rest me easy. I'm laying this burden down.
Enough crying. The blues is for singing, not crying. Bodine drained a bottle and let his left hand go walking. They sent old Jake out on the kind of rowdy, defiant note befitting a good blues man. By the time they were through with it, folks were hooting and field hollering and a good time was being had by all. And old Jake, he just a sitting there. Folk claim he played on all night long. Say if you listen real good, you can hear him to this day. A down-home Delta blues man on his last gig. Barely breathing and as still as a mountain's heart, Melvira Dupree sat at her altar, eyes closed, hands resting in her lap, candles lit at the four corners of the earth. The sun was in the sky. The door opened. She sighed, She smiled. She opened her eyes.
Hey, baby.
He lay down on a pallet. Tough guy. Her eyes were indulgent and she snuggled up to him. Absently, his arms went around her and she was suddenly limp against him, laughing and crying and gasping for breath. She smelled liquor, but this once she didn't mind.
Oh, Lucas, I'm so sorry.
Bodine half smiled, half frowned. A question, maybe two.
Jake,
she explained.
I'm so sorry, baby.
Though not half as sorry as she would have been had not her man come walking through that door this morning. Bodine shrugged and smiled crookedly. He's so cool. She kept hugging him with a grateful, sobbing passion that confused him. He resisted it, afraid to be touched by true emotion, but gradually letting himself unknot into the gently demanding warmth of a woman who cares. When he spoke, it was like he really wasn't speaking to her, or even himself. It was as though he was talking to God.
Just don't seem fair somehow. He would have been a good blues man, but he didn't get to do his best stuff. Just don't seem fair.
Since when?
Melvira murmured into his neck.
Did blues men expect life to be fair?
Bodine looked at her a perplexed moment before suddenly unleashing a cathartic, God-defiant laughter rippling with life lust. She snuggled up on him, stroking him and giving him that special mellow treatment. Wasn't nothing for giving that old boy fortitude like Melvira beaming approval on him. He snuggled deeper into her arms, warm and satisfied, feeling that tension just melt away, a king on a throne.
You feel like giving me some loving, baby?
Her voice is so soft he more feels it than hears it.
Been waiting with it for you.
Then she held him like he needed to be held, playing him like the fine old instrument he was.
You are listening to Black Books Live.
Thank you all for tuning in to Black Books Live. We thank you, our community, for your continued support, and we are energized for the coming year with more classic authors and their wonderful books. Black Books Live is dedicated to highlighting our best for the world to hear. That means you, our listeners, giving us feedback about our webcast. So please visit our website, www.blackbookslive.com, and click on the contact page and send us a note. Stay tuned for our next episode as we feature the master of mother wit, J. California Cooper. I am Cher J.
And I'm Jason Harris.
I am looking forward to sharing with you again. Until then, onward and upward.